Oh, nice. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Lazy Graves. That was Lord of the Dogs doing her every single time she does these vocal warm-ups. She's pretty diva about it, but makes a big difference.
Yeah, for sure.
So we are coming back with, we didn't plan this, but another post-apocalyptic film.
Oh, but we got to explain why.
Okay, go ahead.
Because you brought me a fat stack of VHS to choose from.
Yeah, fat stack, all right.
Fat stack.
Small talk. So you brought me a stack. I chose, what was it, Munchies?
No, nope, Munchie.
And then we got ready to watch it, and it was released in the 90s.
Yep.
So you put it in the stack.
Yeah, I put it in the 90s fat stack.
But it was an 80s stack, and you misplaced it. And then I cried.
Yeah, you had a big opinion about it. Why did you even bring this out?
What?
Why am I having to look through stuff that's not even
from
the 80s?
Give it to me. 90s out. 80s now.
So I'm your co-host, E.K. Wimmer.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I'm Mariah Rose Wimmer.
Yes, and we are going to talk more post-apocalyptic because it's just, you know, we're well-versed in it now.
Yeah.
We've the whole universe. But before we do that, we have to jump into a couple things. I need to know what you found. You need to dive into things or jump in?
Dive.
Okay. Dive in to thrift store finds of the week.
Okay. So I met up with my friend Darla. Hi, Darla.
Hi.
We had some coffee and we strolled over to Savers where I found three, not one, not two, three flesh-toned ceramic baby doll heads.
Yeah, they're really creepy. You want to know what makes them really creepy even more than just being ceramic baby doll heads that are on the shelf right now? It was kind of like a moment from like Amityville Horror or something. I walked in and these fruit flies had all collected into the eyeball socket of one of them. And
they
were like, huddling around it. And it really creeped me out.
What? Yeah. Ugh. Maybe I shouldn't put them next to the fruit.
Yeah. Well, that was a good find, though.
It was. I don't know why I bought them. And the girls, our daughters, were like, why did you buy that? And I said to put over their beds. They weren't pleased with that suggestion. So, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. They'll find their home. I actually told you I might put them in the garden, just like sprouting out of the ground.
Baby dad's like motel hell. We should just put little bags over their heads.
Yeah, I like it. Let's do that.
And then when nosy people come over and remove the bags, they'll just find baby heads in our garden.
Yep, no problems here. Also, I did buy I found an E.T. Glass cup, and I bought that too.
Oh, nice. Didn't we already have an E.T. cup?
Yeah, now we have two.
Oh, is it the same design or a different one? Oh, good, because that one was fading a little.
So what are your thrift store finds?
My thrift store find of the week relates to this week's episode, actually, after the fall of New York that we will be discussing, because I never discussed it previously in a thrift store find, but I found this at a thrift store, but I did not find this movie that we watched. I found a beta version, and I don't collect beta tapes, and I have a friend that I trade with, and he collects beta, so I contacted him. I said, hey, I just found this awesome post-apocalyptic beta. Do you need it? And he said, that's funny. I just ordered it on VHS, and I don't want the VHS. Do you want to just trade the VHS for the beta? And I was like, yeah, awesome. So our version was a direct trade because I had a version on beta, and he had a version on VHS. So that's where it came from, was a thrift store find.
What is the difference in looks between a beta and VHS?
Beta is the adorable version of VHS. It's like a miniature version.
Oh, like a cassette tape?
No, not like quite like a cassette. Yeah, it's like in between a cassette and a VHS. It's basically like one spool kind of size instead of two. And the box is identical, but it's tiny. So it looks like a Barbie version almost. It's really cute.
Weird.
Yeah, and people are diehard. I'm surprised you didn't see them. I had a bunch of betas a while ago. I thought you saw them.
If I did, I made zero note.
Yeah, they're real cool. It's just a different form of tape, but... they're miniature versions. They're adorable, really.
Cute.
I don't have a beta player, but it was really hard to let go of some because I had some amazing ones I found, and I wanted to just keep them because they were adorable to look at. But no, I've got a bunch of people that collect beta now, so I just
you have them. Where do you keep them?
Well, I don't have the beta now.
No, I meant the people.
Oh, they're over there by the pinball machine.
Hey, guys.
Okay, I'm excited to get started on this film, but I'm dying to know an interesting fact about you this week.
About me?
I want to know. I gotta
you?
Know.
You want to know a fact about me?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm going to fly by the seat of my pants.
Oh, this will be good.
Oh, it's always just weird, like, medical details. I'm going to skip a medical thing. It's really hard. Maybe, I don't think I shared this before. When I was little, I used to go to a nearby neighbor's field and call their horse to me. I didn't know its name, so I called it Jiggler because it was a boy horse. And I cut some of Jiggler's mane and braided it into my own hair.
What was the expectation of that? Were going to steal some of its essence or power?
I think it bonded us for life.
Oh, good. Oh, that's really beautiful.
Yep. Me and Jiggler all the way to the end.
For life. Now Jiggler's a rotted skeleton in the ground.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was young, so there's like a chance he could still be alive.
Yeah, he is wondering where his hair went. He's going to come haunt you like a Scary Stories tale.
Oh.
He's going to come, like, you'll hear galloping down the street at night at 3 a.m, and then it'll be like, where's my hair?
You know what? Huh. Why do we always hear about, like, only humans haunt us? Or maybe, like, a cat? Or maybe, like, a devil dog? But you never hear of, like, a raccoon haunting. Where it just, like, knocks over your trash in the night.
It's because raccoons have better things to do. Dogs are needy, so in the afterlife, they would still want you. They'd be like, hey,
aww,
remember me?
What about cats, though? They don't care.
Oh, yeah. The cats don't haunt, though.
But I feel like I've heard of ghost cats.
Sure. But it was an observation of a ghost cat. A cat didn't care if it was, like, being seen or not.
We live out in the desert. Let's start a ghost roadrunner story.
Okay.
Let's just, like, spread the rumor around the neighborhood and see what sticks. Throw it at the wall. I'll go, like, write it on the culvert or the little arroyos where they have cement and everybody's tagging about how love sucks. I'm going to write, there's a ghost roadrunner, and we'll let it go.
We should also somehow get it started at our daughter's elementary school, because that's where all urban legends are born.
Let's do it.
Yeah, it's like a demonic, like a devil ghost roadrunner.
I love it. And then soon we'll see some weird hick on the news and be like, it was just a ghost roadrunner.
I have it in my fridge.
He's giant and he had red eyes. Okay, so what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is, as of tonight, I received a fun text from a friend, and it was a production still of a short film that he's shooting right now from a film that I wrote, well, a script that I wrote years and years ago called Cold Coffee, and it's a sci-fi comedy. And I was going to make it, and I was like, oh, I don't have time for this. And then I had another friend that was going to make it. Something fell through. Then another friend picked it up. They couldn't make it. And so then my friend Tim finally said, no, I'm going to. And sure enough, out of nowhere tonight, he said, check it out. And it was the actors on set with all the cameras and lights. And they were shooting this short film, which I'll do the music for, of course. But it was really, really fun to see it finally happen, because it's a great little story. But I didn't think it would ever see the light of day.
Yeah, it's
so
really cool.
Yeah, that's my fun fact, is that there's a new short film being made.
Yeah,
it's
exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Okay, you know what else is exciting?
What?
This damn film.
Yes.
Do you want to know the full title? Did I tell it to you last night?
You did, but tell it to me again.
Okay, so it's called After the Fall of New York, but it's actually called 2019 After the Fall of New York.
Oh, do you remember when New York fell? All of it?
Yeah.
To ruins?
Yeah, well, the beginning is definitely in ruins. 1983, directed by Sergio Martino. But he goes by Martin Dolman.
What?
Well, he's an Italian, so it's the idea being that you change your name for an American audience.
To Martin Dolman.
Martin Dolman.
Boy.
He's done some other films that are pretty rad. A lot of Italian, I mean, just all Italian films. But
yeah,
two of the ones that came out right away were Screamers and Alligator, the legendary Alligator. He did
that. Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty cool. He had a ton of roles, or of credits, but we start with the Vestron logo, which is always a good indication. I've never seen this. You've never seen this.
Oh, no.
And so I had expectations which were absolutely fulfilled, but I didn't quite know what we were getting into.
I had very low expectations because the cover was so dull.
The cover sucks.
It was like Martin Dullman.
D-U-L-L.
Yep.
It's a bad cover, especially because of how awesome this movie is.
Yes.
There could have been a variety of things. A blown out post-apocalyptic New York scene. It could have been a renegade street gang. It could have been anything.
Could have been a man playing trumpet.
A mutant homeless man playing trumpet.
Could have been anything.
That's such a specific thing.
I don't know.
Well, it starts with the Vestron logo, so I was like, okay, well, we're in good hands, but we'll see where it's going. And then we open up into this post-apocalyptic New York, and guess who's playing trumpet?
Who?
The homeless man.
Yes.
Hanging out, playing a cool trumpet solo.
Yeah.
To some pretty awesome music.
But it's like an electronic trumpet.
Yeah, for sure.
That a man is playing as he stares wistfully at the ruins of New York City.
The panning through New York is amazing. It's all miniature. Completely, like, to scale model that they're panning through this burnt down ruins of New York.
And meanwhile, it's being overdubbed, explaining that it's 20 years after the nuclear holocaust, and no human has been born.
Right.
And the region, I don't know if it's the world, I guess it's the world, is led by the Uraks, which is a group of Euro-Afro-Asian unity.
Yeah, they've kind of become the militant group that's dominated, and no child has been born because of the radiation. And then also there have been people that have been mutated as well.
Yes, and the Uraks are doing experiments to find a way to continue the human race.
Yeah, I mean, right away this is like, okay, I'm in. This is everything you need from a post-apocalyptic film in the 80s. I loved the miniature set at the beginning with the blown-out buildings, and I also really dug the music right away, even though there's like a solo trumpeter.
I only wanted exclusive trumpet solo through the entire movie.
Yeah, did you catch the composer's name?
No.
Oliver Onions.
Oh, yes, I did, because remember I shouted Oliver Onions.
Yeah, so Oliver Onions is clearly not the name of the composer, but it's an interesting story.
It's not?
No, it's two brothers. Two brothers that were incredibly popular and famous in Italy.
Were they twin brothers? One was named Oliver and one was named Onions.
No, I don't know if they were twins. One was named Guido and one was named Maurizio. De Angelis. They were brothers that were super prolific musicians and really famous for composing music in Italy. And they were so famous that to not oversaturate the market with their name, they had to go under a bunch of false names so that people wouldn't be like, oh, more music from them. And one of the ones that they adopted was Oliver Onions. And that became their most famous like stage name.
You know, they were out like drinking once and call ourselves Oliver Onions as a joke, and it stuck.
Yeah. But you know what? Through the whole film, this score was super solid. I don't think it's ever been released, but I really enjoyed the music throughout the whole entire film.
Oh, I feel like I have a mental picture of Oliver Onions, and I'm a little sad.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Okay.
So, yeah, the Uraks are this military group that have a hold on the city. There's awesome costumes right away from the military group. It's like futuristic, post-apocalyptic. With, like,
black robes.
Yeah, with this, like, helmet kind of thing. They're really cool.
And they ride white horses.
Yeah, and then...
So many white horses.
We meet the, like, street gangs, too. There's a ton of, like, spikes and chains and football helmets and football jerseys. Yeah. I mean, it is quintessential post-apocalyptic 80s. Well,
and this is just the intro scene, but I wanted to touch on one thing. So there are people who have festering radiation wounds, and the Uraks are there to, like, gather women, I guess, to do tests on so that they can try and continue the human race. But then they just use flamethrowers to kill everybody.
Well, they're in there to hunt them. It's like a game. Like, the game begins and they get to go in and just kill and eradicate any of the weird mutant street people they can.
So they don't want to do experiments on these people, because they were saying moments prior that they were going to experiment on them.
I don't know if it's they need to experiment on the women, but...
Oh, maybe they're corpses.
Yeah, maybe, but it's like a game where all these Uraks with flamethrowers go in and just start torching everybody. So they're going through, they're burning all the street punks. The music's amazing. And it's a pretty drawn out scene where the street gangs are fighting back and they're kind of killing other people. And it's just this, it's setting the tone of like a total chaos and brawl in post-apocalyptic or in, in New York.
It gave me no confidence in the authority of the Yuraks, though. If they're worried about like the end of the human race, they're pretty cavalier about taking human lives. So it really made no sense, but that's okay. Yeah.
But then we flash to Nevada. It's obviously the same exact day, and there is this awesome death race about to happen.
Yep.
With the death race cars, which I'm a huge fan of. It's got the spikes on the front. It's got usually some kind of shield, a gun or a cannon attached. And the drivers always, have you noticed this? I swear, every driver either has one of two things, a football helmet for a helmet, or like a medieval crusader knight's helmet that they wear.
Yeah,
and that's what we have. They're both represented in this.
Yes, and then they start doing what is like jousting, but with cars.
And it's cool because there's basically like a punk bands. It looks like just people in punk bands.
Yeah, there's
bands,
like punks cheering.
Like dyed hair, mohawks, all like cheering
just
them on.
Straight punks.
While there's this great synth score that's playing. I mean, I immediately, this is right at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
I was like,
I just wanted to watch that.
Yeah, I was all in.
Let's follow this storyline.
It was really cool. So there's two guys like shooting each other's cars. It's a death race. And then we meet our hero. I don't know if he's a hero. He's like a hero, anti-hero. I don't know.
He's not particularly likable at any point.
But he's in like a stud jacket.
Yeah, that's how you know he's special.
Got this really cool headband, long hair.
5 o'clock shadow.
And the death race guy that he's racing like thinks that they kill him, but he escapes out of the car and then appears and does this really amazing, like epic fight scene where he's doing flips and roundhouses and stuff. And
yeah, he's quite spry.
He's the real deal. This guy is like an action star for sure.
Yeah, he definitely wanted to be, that's for sure.
His character's name is Parsifal, but his actual name is Michael Sopko or something.
They put his name first in the credits.
Yeah,
like he's
Sopkiw, which does not roll off the tongue.
Sopkiw.
He only did 5 films, which is interesting because I thought he did a really good job, and he's got the looks. I mean, he's a good looking guy. He's got the martial arts skills.
So much jaw.
He's got it all. Yeah, he's got it all going. But he only did 5 films, and what's interesting is 3 out of 5 were all done in 1984.
Weird.
One was 1985, and then the only other credit he had was a really bit part from 2014.
What?
I know. But would you like to hear some of the titles of the other films
he
did? Because I was like, okay, well, I know what's coming up next on Laser Graves. One was called Blast Fighter from 1984. The other was called Devil Flesh.
Mm.
And then my personal favorite from 1985, and trust me, I already looked it up on eBay, and it's way too expensive to find on VHS, but it's called Massacre in Dinosaur Valley.
What?
And it looks amazing.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It's my personal goal to see all 3 of those now.
Wait, well, we might have to YouTube it.
Yeah.
He goes to claim his reward after his victory,
mm-hmm.
and there's a robotic human clown wearing an eyeball hat. So it's like a red clown. She's got red hair, and she's sort of robotic, but it's also just a real person in a costume. And she's going, to the victor, long life and happiness.
Because they're cyborgs. We get the backstory that there used to be like a whole world of cyborgs, and they've all been eradicated.
Really?
I missed that. Yeah, remember?
No.
Right, so, it'll come back at the end of the film.
Okay. I know that they're talking about cyborgs. I didn't realize that there had been a bunch. He wins a license to kill, or several licenses to kill that are like tokens that I guess he gets. And then also he gets a woman, which is revealed to him in a video of like a sexy woman.
Yeah, she's like this babe with an accent.
Yes.
And he gets on his motorcycle and she hops on the back and they start cruising down the desert. And this futuristic blimp follows them. And it's basically, I think it's not the Yuraks. It's like another group of militant people who...
It's the former United States government.
Yeah, it's like an opposing force. And they're in this futuristic blimp, and they track him down while he's cruising down the desert on a motorcycle with his new woman. And they're like, hey, we need to talk to you. And he totally blows him off. He's like, I don't have time for this. Get out of here. And she is so impressed with how, like, awesome he is that she gives a pretty amazing line here.
What does she say?
She says, you're too much, master, and you're going to make great love.
Oh, that's right. And he's like, yup.
Yeah. So people on the road have... They come across these two people that are on the side of the road.
They're, like, laying in the dirt.
And they have taken a sip of radioactive water, apparently, and they're oozing out of their mouth. And so, he just goes up and shoots them with this, like, blue laser.
And he says they would have died within a couple of
hours.
It's
really funny.
And he gives her his licenses to kill, and then he sets her free. So, yeah. Because she had been given to him as a slave.
And he didn't want her. He was just like, here's some licenses, there's a horse.
Yes.
Just go live your life.
So what was his motivation for the weird car jousting? Who knows? Maybe he's just a sucker for a good car joust.
I think he just likes to, yeah, dominate.
Yeah, maybe. Because he certainly doesn't want a license to kill or a babe.
So we jump from Nevada desert with people oozing out of the, drinking radioactive water to immediately cut to Alaska. And
yes.
This is where we get, like, scientists kidnap him and take him to a research base. Okay, so I was...
Oh, the government. Pan American Agency.
Oh, is that what they're
yeah.
called? So I already had my suspicions with this. It comes after, obviously, Escape from New York. And
uh-huh.
there is a lot of lifting from Escape from New York, which is not a surprise. Italian films did this a lot. They'd watch a cool American film and then they would just do their own version.
Yeah.
And it's called After the Fall of New York.
Yeah.
So I had this suspicion. It was immediately realized with the whole opening scenes. But then when it went to the research base in Alaska, I was like, are they also ripping off The Thing? Like,
is this just
a Carpenter kind of homage the whole entire film? I'm okay with it because I love John Carpenter, but I did find that really
yeah.
funny.
He has a snake quality
it's
to him.
The way they treat him is very snake too, because what we find is this backstory that comes up right now is like straight out of Escape from
yeah.
New York. Because they kidnap him, they take him to a research base, and they tell him the whole back plot is that there's one fertile woman that they know of, and she's in New York. She's capable of producing like 500 eggs. And
like they know.
Yeah, and Parsifal is the only man for the job, and if he does it, he'll get a trip to a brand new planet. So he has
they're going to send him to Alpha Centauri.
Yeah.
And he can ride there and hopefully find a place for new life.
Yeah, they're going to repopulate. But the premise is he has to go into the war zone that is New York and find somebody and bring them out. And then he'll get his, like, reward.
Yeah, if he returns with a fertile lady.
Which is so similar to Escape from New York, where
yeah.
he has to go into New York, find the president, retrieve him, and they'll, like,
then
pardon him for his
yeah.
crimes. I mean, it was... He's got that... The whole look is identical, too.
Yeah.
It's really, really funny.
And then he's told, you can go, but you can take your wits and these two gentlemen.
Oh,
and two
yeah.
guys enter, two, like, buff guys. One is named Ratchet.
Yes.
Who's the strongest man. And one is named Bronx, whose brain is a map of New York City.
Yes. Bronx is the map of New York, and Ratchet is, like, the man with the muscles. And they're really funny when they enter because one's got like an eye patch and
yeah.
it's just so dumb. And then we get some more homeless trumpet.
More New York
like
City
jazz
trumpet
playing.
Solo.
And this is the transition. This is how we transition back to New York. The score is really cool, but I have a very serious question here.
Did they ride their motorcycles from Alaska?
They rode their motorcycles from Alaska all the way to New York.
In like the same day.
Because they're as the trumpet player is playing, it transitions from them in Alaska to them pulling up, not only pulling into New York, he stops playing trumpet to greet them because
yeah.
they ride up to the trumpet player that's
yep.
been playing since Alaska.
Just waiting for
I have
them.
So many questions, but I'm just going to save it. I just accepted it because I loved everything about it.
So, yeah, he goes from Alaska to... the New York City that is in ruins, and they cruise up to him, But then, did you notice that Bronx is crying?
No.
He's crying as he approaches, and there was a little bit of a backstory about how he watched his family die in New York.
Okay.
So he's a really crying human. Whatever. Oh,
there's some depth. But they jump into the tunnels because this is how they're going to kind of sneak in.
That's how what the trumpet player guides them to do.
Also, did you notice, because this is all clearly overdubbed, that our lead character, Parsifal, his delivery of his lines sounds like He-Man, the cartoon. Mm-hmm. He's like, and we're going to do this. And this is how we're going to do this. It's really weird.
I didn't notice that.
I could not the whole movie. I just kept thinking it was like He-Man's voice.
I don't understand why they overdub when they're clearly speaking English. Because I looked. I was like, are these guys speaking Italian? But I watched and they're speaking English, but it's overdubbed.
It's so broken. That's why. They're like, say we're going into New York, and then they're like, El Clinioi.
What?
And that's what it sounds like. So then they overdub it with, and we're going into New York.
Oh, okay.
Remember when we did Monster
yeah,
Dog?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we got halfway through the film before you stopped and said, wait, is this in a different language?
Shush.
There are some solid action sequences in
yeah.
this film, by
so
the way.
They go through their tunnel, and there's a lot of, I think it's 50% of this movie, of them in tunnels with rats.
Yes.
Just wandering through the sewers. And then finally they're out. And also at this point is when I realized Bronx has a grabber hand.
Yeah, he's
is
got
this
like a
where
claw.
That's revealed?
I don't know.
I don't think I knew it, noticed it before.
He's got this claw. Also, when they come out of the tunnel and they come up above ground uh-huh. and we see like New York, the sets are really awesome. They're burned out, graffiti, garbage everywhere.
It's like a bus junkyard that
yeah,
they come into.
Yeah, but then I kind of had a question and I was like, is this a film set or is this just New York in the 80s?
No, they were for sure at a bus junkyard.
Okay. I could have gone either way.
Yeah, so they start battling a gang in said bus junkyard. They hide in a sewer.
Oh, we got a guy who is eaten by a rat here.
Yeah.
That is really awesome. And the guy, there's like the leader of the sewer gang. He comes up and instead of like kicking off the rats from this guy being eaten, he uses a whip to individually whip the rats off, which is so hilarious to me that not only is it like it takes a lot more skill and time, but while this guy is actively eaten alive, instead of like quickly brushing all the rats off, he's like,
I see no problem here.
Like to 40 rats on this guy's body. There are so many cool characters that we meet here with the rat gang.
Well, it's lots of gangs. I call these the Stompy Whip Gang, but they're actually the Needle People.
Yeah, and we also find out, too, that Ratchet has all these gizmos that he uses.
Yeah, like, they're all, like, versions of yo-yos.
Kind of. The first one we get is definitely a yo-yo. It's like a robotic...
They're all kind of yo-yos,
metal
though.
Metal yo-yo. Well, like some of them are, like,
boomerangs
little,
on
little
strings.
Balls on strings. Yeah, they're really fun. So we see that Ratchet has a cool yo-yo.
We also, I feel like we need to address how they ended up in the subway again after having just come out of the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they pop up, have their battle with the gang, and then some bums pour hot oil on them. And so they
yeah,
retreat.
That's really funny. They're just pouring, like, but they run up and it's two like old homeless men
yeah.
and they're like,
exactly.
I'm not joking. That's what they do. They like
but it's
laugh.
Just tons of gangs. Like every corner is a new street gang that
absolutely.
We encounter.
Yeah. It's really, it's pretty entertaining. When we finally meet the like
needle,
rat gangs,
needle people, they eat rats, but.
It's interesting because while they're all cooking rats and counting rats, there is a pan flute playing. That's the music is like a... Oh, I should... Oh, you know what?
And I will make the sound with my mouth right now. That was right.
That was a really good impression of the pan flute solo that was
hidden
playing.
Hidden talent.
Yeah. So... We meet the leader of the street people, this gang. You want to know what his official name is in the
yes.
credits?
Yes.
Rat Eater King.
Oh.
He's played by Hal Yamanouchi, who, surprisingly, has a ton of credits.
Uh-huh.
But you know what he was in?
What?
He was the chief pirate in The Life Aquatic.
Oh.
Yeah. So okay. I thought that was cool.
Okay. So we see a woman in the rat gang who she later refers to as the needle people. And I assume it's because they're using like weird stabby instruments to skewer the rats. I don't really know.
I guess.
But her name is Jada.
Yeah, she's one of our babes.
And I was like, she's the fertile woman for
sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. Because
she was, like, so very different. Everybody else is covered in filth, and there she is, just very clean, but still eating rats. And they want to kill... They find a little person, and they get angry at him because he's not a boy.
Yeah,
because
they're like, it's a child! And they all go chasing after him, and then they find out it's just a little person, and they're like, no, it's not!
Kill
and
him.
They get really mad at him for not being a child.
So this is when, what is his name, Percival?
Yeah.
And his crew decide to show down and throw down with needle people. And they rescue this little person whose name is Shorty.
Yeah.
And they're captured by the rat people or the needle people in the process. So they're trying to save him. They rescue him but get themselves captured.
Yeah, but is this when the Yurak come and shoot up part of the gang and they take Bronx?
Yeah.
They take Bronx as a captive.
Right.
Because
they
take
Bronx and Parsifal.
Yeah. So this is where we get... I don't think they take Parsifal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they put him... Yeah, okay. So this flashes now from the sewer to the Yurak, like, hangout. Mm-hmm. Their whatever it would be called, their headquarters.
Yes.
And they're interrogating Bronx, and we find out that he was a former history teacher. And this is... Okay, for as ridiculous as this whole scene is in the backstory... I'm going to lay it out there that this film actually has some good social commentary about the destruction that people bring, like human existence, onto the world and each other. Because this whole scene, he's talking about how he doesn't care about the future. And the Yurak leader is like, why not? And he said, because we're not learning from our mistakes. We keep harming each other. We're bad people. And I thought... For as cheesy as this film is, this is really profound because this is like knee deep in the Cold War. The wall hasn't fallen yet. And they're making like extreme social commentary about how he's saying, what's the point of fighting for anything anymore? Because all we keep doing is repeating ourselves and harming each other. And I wanted to point that out because...
No, I noticed that too.
The film is fun to make, like to talk about and make fun of. But there is an actual, at the seat of all of this... Really interesting commentary, and I could not help but wonder if it was interesting because it was Italians looking at American civilization during this time and commenting on it.
I kept thinking that too, the context of who made this, where it took place, and what they were saying, because I also noticed they reiterate it several times.
Yeah.
Basically, there's two points. Like, one side is saying there is hope. Hope for a future, hope for life. And the other side is like, look what we do.
Yeah,
why?
This is what we
deserve
do. We're going to do it again.
Let us just die. Make this end. This is horrible.
Yeah, I really liked that. And then, after we get that backstory, though, which was a really useful and good character development.
And this is all happening in front of Picasso's Guernica.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So the Yurak leader asks Bronx why he came to New York City. And he says... To dig the eyes out of a worm like you. And then he pokes out the leader's eyes.
That was such a totally awesome scene.
Yes.
Do you remember being like shocked? I was like, what? Mm-hmm. He just poked out both his eyes with his claw.
Yes.
It was really...
The
really...
claw we had only just become comfortable with him
it
having.
Was so amazing.
Yes.
Then we flash to our hero, Percival. He's shackled.
He's being held captive by a sexy babe.
Oh, there's a very sexy Yurak babe who comes to try and mess with him. And her name is... Well, her real name is Anna... I want to say...
The actress's name?
Yeah. Like, okay. the babe that we meet. Because she's like an uber babe that walks in.
She plays Anya. Or Sonya.
Yeah, it's a little different. But she her real name's Anna Konikis. And she was actually... she's this Greek actress, but she got her start because she was voted as Miss Volcano was her first title.
What? I want to be
so cool.
I want to be Miss Volcano.
And then from there, she became Miss Italy in 1977. And then after that, modeled and then got into acting.
Yeah.
So this was one of her first, like, real acting roles. Another film that she did, who also, this film stars somebody that we're going to meet very soon as well. And I want to see it so bad. It's called Warriors of the Wasteland. And she's in that too.
Cool.
But we meet her. She, it seems at
so
first.
So is her name Anya or Sonya? Because I felt like I heard it said both ways.
No, it's not Anya, I don't think. Well, it's like a weird, we'd have to look it up.
Okay.
But she is essentially like the second in command.
Yeah.
She's like the dark leader. But at first we get this impression that she's just interrogating him and trying to get information out of him. And then we realize later that she's like way more twisted and morbid as time goes on.
She also, though, her main objective is to capture the Fertile Lady because she wants the Fertile Woman.
Right. So we'll flash to the eye transplant. That's pretty cool. The set's really great. All the sets in this film, I'm like, damn, what's the budget on this? Because they're so great. There's computers and futuristic like furniture and costumes, and it's great. But it's funny because eventually the group of heroes escape. And it's very Spaceballs where, as they're escaping, it's supposed to be like a robot animated voice, but it's clearly a human trying to sound like a robot going, red alert, red alert, over and over.
They didn't have auto-tune then.
Every time in this film that there's supposed to be like a robotic alert system, it's always just somebody trying to sound like a robot.
Yeah, they're just like really enunciating their words.
Well, we do have a loss here. It's a heavy loss. Bronx is killed.
Yep.
But they have rescued the babe, so mission accomplished
Jada.
So far.
They get Jada. Yep,
they get Jada.
Well, Bronx is killed, so it's Percival.
Yes.
And Jada. I don't know why that name will not stick in my head. And they are escaping, and then they get kind of cornered and Ratchet. Flies into the rescue.
He whips out some more toys.
And,
he is the man with the toys.
And then the little person also, whom they
Shorty.
Helped earlier, comes and helps them escape back to the sewers. And he and then his like gang is a bunch of little people. And they all help and treat Percival and Giada and Ratchet well after the escape.
They're giving him food and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And Percival thanks him. And Shorty's like, well, I owed you one. And then eventually basically says, look, I can get you out and stuff like that, but take me with you.
I want to
And
join.
So he's going to join the gang. Shorty will. But then out of nowhere, the bad babe arrives and she shoots like the goons shoot this sound radar thing down into the ground.
Which is valid. Actually, that was one of the things where I was like, oh, that sounds kind of contemporary.
Yeah.
Because like, think about what was happening. I think it was in Cuba. There was like weird sound things that were happening to government employees. Do you remember that? It was like a year or two ago.
I read a thing about a military weapon that was being developed that was a sound gun that could bend around corners, so eventually it would like debilitate somebody. But that's what they're doing, and then they're all screaming and overacting and rolling around.
That's so good.
And then this is when I thought Percival like reaches into a rock and grabs two chunks and just shoves them in his ear, and apparently that instantly makes it okay to not be affected by the sound wave.
Yeah.
And I stopped because I was laughing, and I'm like, did he just break off two pebbles and put them in his ear?
Yes.
And then we stopped him, and you said, no, it's charcoal that he's breaking off from the fire.
Yeah, it looks like something, like a burned piece of log.
And he breaks off pieces and puts them in everybody's ears. Then we later find out it wasn't rocks, it wasn't charcoal, it was wax that
apparently there was just melted wax that
was
he could shove
not,
in their ears.
Not clear at all. But
that's why they had to say it later.
Wildly entertaining scene.
Yes. Actually, as I watched this movie, I kept thinking they could really use a good editor to help make this film a little more clear and concise. Anyway, so Percival and Giada and Shorty put, and Ratchet put the wax in their ears, and then they're just like, sorry, other little people, you guys are gonna die. They just scoot away.
But then we run into another gang, and this gang is run by Big Ape. And Big Ape's gang is like circus freaks, half monkey, half gorilla people.
Yes.
Like mutants.
They catch them with the coolest baby trap, though. It's like a
Do you want to explain that? Because that was really funny.
So the our crew that just escaped the sound war or whatever... they come across a woman rocking a baby in, like, a rocker. And they're like, what? And they approach, but it's a baby trap. And then out leaps an ape man.
Well, it's not a baby. It's a doll.
Yes.
And it's a woman doll.
Yeah, it's not real.
Pretend that it's a woman with a baby.
They're, like, mechanized.
And then a net just drops on top of them over the top. It's the funniest. It's so funny.
Yeah. And so they're captured again. So basically, they just suck at what they're doing. They have succeeded on no level, and Bronx is dead. And they have been caught by basically every single gang they encounter.
Yeah, they do get caught by every gang. This gang, however, wants a showdown because one of the, like, second-in-commands looks at his fertile babe and is like, that's the one. She needs a man.
Yes.
I want her. And then he gets up to take her, and Percival's like, she's my woman. You can't have her.
Yes.
And then they decide to fight for it. So there's this duel, the two of them. And Percival beats him down. And so he gets her, and they end up then being like, well, since I won you, we should go make out, because she is clearly...
Not just make out.
She's, like, hard up, like, all over.
Giada?
Yeah, she's like, tell me you want to do this and stuff like that. And then he says the most romantic line of the whole film. He tells her, if love had any meaning, he'd love her.
He says, exactly, Giada, if love had any meaning in this world, you'd be the one I love. But it doesn't, and I don't, but I'm going to bone you anyway.
Yeah, and then she says, well, like, kiss me like you love me.
It was so weird. Funny. But they're trying to build a loving relationship in, I don't know, no time. But I also wanted to say that it was very unclear that this gang was half ape. The leader is called Big Ape, but he doesn't look like an ape. He just looks like a little bit extra hairy. And I didn't realize it until their leader, Big Ape, says, they've been combing this city for you guys like you're a bunch of bananas. And I was like, why does this guy care about bananas? And that's when you, like, read me whatever you'd read on IMDb and revealed that they were ape people. Some of them looked more ape-like.
But some of them definitely looked ape-like, but he didn't.
The main guy definitely did not. So no. I was super confused, but he is Big Ape.
Yeah, and so he's basically, like, friends with the gang now until the next day where he wakes up with a sword fight because he says... You're with the girl. The girl that you're with is the fertile one.
Yeah, they think Giada is the fertile one.
Yeah, I need her because I have to, like, have my child and stuff like that. And then Shorty says, no, he's wrong. That's not the fertile one. And this is when I was like, wait, is it not?
Because the whole time we thought
we were convinced.
Giada was
this
fertile.
Was a pretty straightforward film. And then Shorty goes on this long journey to lead the whole gang to something we didn't know about, which is back in his people's area.
It's a weird bunker.
It's a bunker, and he breaks in, they blow up a door, and there's a professor in there who's now dead, and it's like a lab.
He's like a recently deceased professor.
Yeah, and we find there's a lab, and sure enough, there is another woman, and it's the professor's daughter who he put under before the war started.
Her name is Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa. That's like when somebody names a fish a human name.
I know.
So it's
let's get a fish and name her Melissa. Not really.
So
I don't want a fish.
Melissa is this amazing name. There's not Percival or Big Ape. It's Melissa. But Melissa is under this glass. Her dad knew that the war would cause, like, mutations. So she's been the only preserved woman in the world that is able to still, like, have children.
Yeah, didn't you know nuclear fallout is totally repelled by purely glass?
Glass works on everything. So then what we realize is that this is apparently a new introduction, a new character. And I had to kind of change my thinking because I for sure thought I had this film figured out. But we turn to the professor. He's dead. And they're like, how are we going to get out with her?
Yes.
And they realize that there's this old car from the past.
It's an old station wagon, but they're like, it works. It's perfect. We're going to use it to go under, like, the Lincoln Tunnel. Is it the Lincoln? One of the
Holland Tunnel.
Yeah.
So they're going to escape, but they need some... They need to reinforce it. They need to make it a death car with, like, spikes and armor. So everybody's going to go to the junkyard nearby
to get some steel.
And they make a last-minute decision to leave the woman...
Chata.
...with Big Ape, who Big Ape has now claimed her, the other...
Melissa.
Melissa, and is like, she's mine. And so they leave Jada with Big Ape, which was like...
Well, the idea was so that Big Ape wouldn't rape Melissa while they're gone.
Which they leave, and it's seriously within seconds of them leaving, he just goes and hits her over the head.
He knocks her out,
and then it's implied?
They thankfully don't show a rape scene, but apparently he sleeps with Melissa, who is unconscious. Melissa is still like Sleeping Beauty or Snow White in a tube, and he... I guess decides he's in love with her and has sex with a sleeping woman.
So this is what I couldn't tell. It's implied that that's the case, but then it also is like he's protecting her because he wants her for his own. And so I couldn't tell if he was protecting her because he had already impregnated
her. He had, because he says at some point, like, my child has to survive.
Oh, interesting.
He's confident, very confident that was a successful...
That's the one go, we'll do it.
That she was ovulating and he hit it at the right time.
It was a very weird scene. But they come back and they don't know what happened because Jada is like, we're fine, let's just get out of here,
yeah,
basically.
She woke up and isn't like, hey,
why'd you knock me out? Yeah,
Big Ape knocked me out and raped the sleeping girl.
So, but they all make an escape with Big Ape. And yes, they're like, we need as many friends as we can get, which we quickly find they run into a barricade of Uriks and they kill Big Ape, like turns into a melted skeleton instantly because they shoot him with some kind of like flame. And this is when we find out this was all part of Percival's plan because it would have killed the woman. But he knew that Big Ape would throw himself over the woman at any cost. And so he ended up taking the, like, ammunition and saved the woman. So that was all part of their big plan.
Yes. Also, along that way, Big Ape threw, like, a scimitar and decapitated some guards. So he earned his...
Oh, that scene was amazing. Yeah. They're going down. They've set up all these roadblocks with, like...
Mines.
Lighted up spikes.
Those are landmines.
So funny. And they're like going up on the side of the
on the wall
tunnel, like riding sideways. And then out of nowhere,
there's
Big
a laser.
Ape pulls out his pirate sword, and he throws it from the car and it flings sideways and goes tow, 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 and cuts off like several heads.
So many heads
in a row.
Yes. And then a laser is what ultimately kills Big Ape.
This film is so, so good.
It is weird.
It is good. Okay.
And so then the Uruk leader, whose eyes have now been rebuilt, is angry with his sexy guard, but she actually shoots him in a major power play.
Oh, that was a surprise.
Because it's all this time, like, this bald guy getting his eyes fixed, and he's the scary leader, and he's threatening her, and she's like, guess what? You're dead. And so she takes over. And then also, this is where we learn Ratchet is a cyborg, and there's a chain knife and rock fight between Ratchet and Percival, right after the sexy babe takes control, and Ratchet ends up dying.
Yes, and speaking of deaths, we have failed to mention a previous scene that we glossed over. What? But when they were at the junkyard getting steel to reinforce their car, they were captured. Well, they were going to be captured by the Uruks, and the only way they could escape was Shorty was going to be a decoy.
Oh,
and
right.
Did you remember this scene?
Yeah.
This, I don't know if I have laughed this hard.
You laughed really hard.
This is not a joke. I was crying. I was laughing so hard.
You lost your beans.
I lost my beans hard. I still have not found them. Because Shorty runs off and he's
unnecessarily.
Like, goes off to try and get them to follow him so that our heroes can escape with the steel that they need. And then Shorty's running around capturing, like, getting all the Uriks to follow him, and then gets cornered by multiple groups. Mm-hmm. And this is out of absolutely nowhere. Like, he doesn't get captured. He doesn't try and escape. He just assesses the situation. This all happens in a millisecond. And he looks over and he yells, "Stupid bastards!" And then flings himself onto a spike and impales himself.
Yes.
And dies.
But I was confused. Did he impale his stomach or his head?
I don't know. I think there were like two spikes.
It was very unclear what he even impaled.
It was so unnecessary and it happened so fast.
Yeah, he could have just scooted off.
It escalated quick. It was like they surrounded him and before he could have any talk, any one-liners, any like escape, he just yelled "stupid bastards" and threw himself onto spikes and killed himself.
Okay.
And I was so sincerely caught off guard by this scene that it'll go down as one of my probably all-time favorite kill scenes any movie because it was so funny. Okay, sorry, it happened. We have to flash forward now back to where we were because we had failed to mention that.
So during the battle with Ratchet, Jada is injured and she is dying. And there's a very long speech as she is in Percival's arms about love. They kiss, and she says, "Life is love," and then she dies.
Before that, she says, "Kiss me now. Kiss me with love."
Yeah, it was like, cool down, lady. You've known him for like an hour, and you've spent most of your time humping in a sewer. You're not in love.
His response is much more appropriate, because right after this long, drawn-out death scene, he immediately is like, okay. And he literally says, "All right," and gets up and just walks off and leaves her dead.
It's a bummer, but like, whatever.
So I can't remember at the very end if our leader, Evil Woman, died or not.
I don't know. I don't know if she did. I don't actually know her end.
I don't remember.
I think Percival and just Percival goes back to the Pan-American folk in Alaska with Melissa.
For the end of our film. But I couldn't remember how it ended with, like, in the wasteland, because it was happening so fast, and that dumb love scene where she's like, "Kiss me with love," I was writing all this down and laughing that I did not catch if our villain was killed. So I don't know. I have no clue. I'm assuming she was. But the film wraps with the president, who is the one who had sent him on this mission.
Well, yeah, we're back in Alaska. Yeah, and it's like an instantaneous drive back to Alaska from New York again.
Yeah, with no trumpet playing, unfortunately.
Oh, what happened to the trumpet player?
I don't know.
Let's follow his journey.
Yeah. But they're back, and sure enough, Percival called it, and the president had lied about the whole thing, but then was like, "I found out I'm sick, so you're going to take my place."
Yeah, that was weird. He's like, "Oh, sorry, I've got cancer. Wasn't sure you'd come through on this, but you can have my spot on the spaceship."
And then they load up, Percival and the
Melissa.
Fertile Melissa get on this shuttle, and they launch
Alpha Centauri.
And then they make eye contact with each other.
Well, some guy comes in and is like, "She's going to wake up and she's going to need to know what happens. And you're the man to tell her," which is on so many levels the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So this woman who's been asleep since before the end of like all human normalcy, she's been knocked out by her pops and some weirdo from the future who is wearing, like, I mean, he looks cool, but other than
he's
kind of sucked through the whole movie. He has purely succeeded because of the efforts of others.
Yeah.
And he's going to explain to her when I don't think he understands even what happened.
Yeah, he got there because of everybody else's death.
But he's going to explain it to her.
Yeah, it's his job.
That she's pregnant with an ape man who raped her because he let him.
Yeah, because they had to go get steel instead of protecting her. Yeah. And they make eye contact, and that's all understood in that final scene.
Yep.
And that's the end of the movie.
Wow. Wah.
You know what? I loved this movie. I thought it was classic.
Yes, it was very weird. Did I love it? Yeah, I liked it.
If I was to write a checklist of things I need in a post-apocalyptic film, it's got blown out New York. It's got amazing street gangs. The punks in this were awesome.
Yeah.
Their costumes were perfect. They were football jerseys, football helmets, spikes on their wrists, dyed hair, mohawks, whatever. They were amazing street gangs. There was street cars.
I love thematic street gangs.
It was so cool. There was this authoritarian like regime that was dictating the world, that was trying to kill everybody.
Yeah.
There was this ape group of mutants. There was cool music. Our hero looks the classic hero, and then they fly off into space to start the world on another planet.
Just come on.
This is a solid film.
Yeah, and at the very end, too, Percival is asking again, like, is this the right choice? Should humans continue?
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, of course, this is such a silly movie, but they are asking important questions that, you know, it's kind of funny because it's supposed to take place in 2019, and here we are in 2019, and we're asking those questions, like, is the world better off without us? Those are extremely relevant right now kind of questions.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to know that they were grappling with that, you know, even 30 years ago or whatever when this was made.
Yeah, I think that's a 20th century predicament for sure that's gone into the 21st century. Yeah. Is like, once World War I happened, really, the world was changed forever.
We've seen too much darkness come out of us.
What's even the point kind of idea? And I thought this film really did capture that. I thought it was well done.
Well, it asked that question, but it also answered it. Like, the opposite voice of saying the answer is, like, we have the capacity to love. So I do love what they are trying to say and the message that they are trying to explain. And I also greatly appreciate that they did it in such a ridiculous, over-the-top, cheesy manner and that they included so many street gangs.
Yeah, that's true. And flamethrowers. That was a bonus, too.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's your episode for the week. And
thanks. It's mine?
No, I was talking to our listeners, not you.
Okay.
Although I guess it was your episode, too.
Thank you.
If you, the listeners, like what you heard, you can rate, review, subscribe. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at Laser Graves, our personal sites on Instagram. If you want to follow us, I'm at Death at 33 RPM.
I'm at Mariah Rose Wimmer. And also, we really wanted to say a thank you. We can tell you guys have really been sharing this, and we super duper appreciate it because we have more downloads than ever, and we really appreciate it. Please keep going.
Yeah, and it's really fun to get little messages from people that are listening, and they're like, dude, love the episode. That's super fun to get because we're doing this we don't have sponsors or anything like that. This is strictly just the two of us
having fun,
talking about movies that are entertaining to us. So the fact that you guys even kind of care is making it all worth it. So tell your friends, tell your family, force it on
everybody.
Steal people's phones and subscribe them without them knowing. Do it. And we'll see you next week.
Double dare you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.